It was a large but elegant mechanism, built of polished walnut and oak, of brass and glass, copper and mirrors, and carved and inlaid ivory, of quartz prisms and brass gears and springs and cogs. The whole thing was rather larger than a widescreen television, although the actual screen itself was no more than 6 inches across. A magnifying lens placed across it increased the size of the picture. There was a large brass horn, like an ear trumpet, coming out of the side, the kind you could find on an antique gramophone. The whole mechanism looked rather like a combined television and video player might look if it had been invented and built 300 years ago by Sir Isaac Newton, which was, more or less, exactly what it was. "Watch," said Dore. She placed the wooden ball onto a platform. Lights shone through the machine and into the ball. It began to spin around and around. A patrician face appeared on the small screen, vividly coloured. Slightly out of time, a voice came from the horn, crackling in mid-speech.
"That two cities should be so near," said the voice. "And yet in all things so far, the possessors above us, and the dispossessed, we who live below and between, who live in the cracks."
Dore stared at the screen, her face unreadable.
"Still,"
said her father,
"I am of the opinion that what cripples us, who inhabit the underside, is our petty factionalism. The system of baronies and fiefdoms is both divisive and foolish."
The Lord Portico was wearing a threadbare old smoking jacket and a skull cap. His voice seemed to be coming to them across the centuries, not days or weeks. He coughed.
"I am not alone in this belief. There are those who wish to see things the way they are. There are others who wish the situation to worsen. There are those..."
"Can you speed it up?" asked the Marquis. "Find the last entry." Dore nodded. She touched an ivory lever at the side. The image ghosted, fragmented, reformed. Now Portico wore a long coat. His skull cap was gone. There was a scarlet gash down one side of his head. He was no longer sitting at his desk. He was talking urgently, quietly.
"I do not know who will see this, who will find this, but whoever you are, please take this to my daughter, the Lady Dore, if she lives."
A static burst wiped across the picture and the sound. Then,
"Dore, girl, this is bad. I don't know how long I've got before they find this room. I think my poor Portia and your brother and sister are dead."
The sound and picture quality began to degrade. The Marquis glanced at Dore. Her face was wet. Tears were brimming from her eyes, glistening down her cheeks. She seemed unaware that she was crying, made no attempt to wipe away the tears. She just stared at her father's image, listened to his words. Crackle. Wipe. Crackle.
"Listen to me, girl,"
said her dead father.
"Go to Islington. You can trust Islington. You must believe in Islington."
He ghosted. Blood had dripped from his forehead into his eyes, and he wiped it off.
"Dore, avenge us. Avenge your family."
A loud bang came from the gramophone horn. Portico turned his head to look off screen, puzzled and nervous. "What?" he said, and he stepped out of frame. For a moment, the picture remained unchanged, the desk, the blank wall behind it. Then an arc of vivid blood splashed across the wall. Dore flicked a lever on the side, blanking the screen, and she turned away. "Here." The Marquis passed her a handkerchief. "Thanks." She wiped her face, blew her nose vigorously, then she stared into space. Eventually, she said, "Islington." I've never had any dealings with Islington, said the Marquis.
I thought it was just a legend, she said.
Not at all. He reached across the desk, picked up the gold pocket watch, thumbed it open. Nice workmanship, he observed.
She nodded. It was my father's.
He closed the cover with a click. Time to go to market. It starts soon. Mr. Time is not our friend. She blew her nose once more, put her hands deep into the pockets of her leather jacket. Then she turned to him, elfin face frowning, odd-coloured eyes bright.
Do you honestly think we can find a bodyguard who could deal with Krupen Vandemar?
The Marquis flashed his white teeth at her. There's been no one since Hunter who'd even be in there with a chance. No, I'll settle for someone who could give you the time you might need to get away.
He fastened the fob of the watch chain to his waistcoat, slid the watch into his vest pocket.
What are you doing? Asked Dor. That's my father's watch.
He's not using it anymore, is he?
He adjusted the golden chain.
There.
That looks rather elegant. He watched the emotions flicker across her face. Grief, anger, and, finally, resignation. We'd better go, was all she said.